Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of May 22nd, and back with me, after it seems like, I don't know, ages, is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy? Welcome back.
Well, yeah. Well, I should say welcome back to you. I've been on the ground in Japan now for about a week, and I take that back, for about 5 days. And you've been back for about 5 hours.
If that. We both happened to be in Hawaii at the same time. I had a pre-existing
vacation.
Yeah, pre-arranged
that won't be
vacation.
Covered by your health insurance.
No. And Jim happened to be over there at the same time. So we did have dinner in Hawaii before he came back. But I just got back. It's Sunday night. We are taping, and I wanted to send out a special thanks again to our buddy Jason Koskri.
Mm.
It was a good show last week. Thank
it
you
was a good show. I thank you, Jason. I enjoyed it. It's good to be back.
Yep, good to have you back. And I know you went out and did the interview this week, so I thank you for that. We have an interview on the show with Dave Buchanan of the Swallows, and we're going to be talking about Yakult, the Tigers and Eagles, and more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay, well, it's been busy. I got back on Wednesday, had Thursday off, you know, and there's a long story about Thursday, much longer than than it needed to be, but. Friday, everything was set, and I went out to Jingu Stadium before my desk job, and I talked to David Buchanan, the right-handed starting pitcher of the Swallows. He just turned 28.
Not that young.
No. Well, then for a foreign player in Japan, it's fairly young. So, you know, in the continuum of ages of new foreign players in Japan, that's kind of on the young side. He's still in his prime. Now, he's kind of an unusual player for Japan because essentially he's been a starter all his career.
Right.
Most of the guys we get are starters, relievers. You know, they've
done both.
Yeah, a lot of them would prefer to start, but, you know, they weren't able to make it as starters in the big leagues. But David Buchanan started 35 major league games for the Philadelphia Phillies. And he's kind of interesting because he's, you know, I read about him, looking through some things about him on the net, and you look at his minor league numbers, and they weren't, you know, normally when you're looking for a minor league player, you look at somebody with eye-popping numbers in the minors, who then can, you know, lose some of that, you know, take some of the air out of that and do well in the majors. Well, his minor league numbers were like, well, if these were major league numbers, they'd be okay.
Right. Nothing that really said, right. Oh, we need this guy on the major league roster.
Exactly. He had a, you know, it was nothing outstanding. But the thing is, then he came to the majors and he did exactly the same. he was essentially, you know, he just raised his game a whole nother notch. And just made the adjustments very, very seamlessly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite impressive. And he had, he didn't have a lot of success. He had an injury. And he was basically faced with a situation, well, I don't know, he didn't play in the majors last year. But he had a pretty good year in AAA, and the Yakult Swallows signed him. Now, the Yakult Swallows are one of the teams that have been, I think with the Hiroshima Carp, have been probably the most successful in terms of bringing over new foreign talent. And it sure looks like, you know, they hit pay dirt with David Buchanan. Now, I was looking, and last year, interestingly enough, he was playing in AAA with the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs of the Phillies AAA team.
Nothing says bacon like an iron pig, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, yeah, no, that's only when it's prepared by an iron chef.
Oh, nice.
but he was teammates with Phil Klein, Frank Herman, and Elvis Araujo of the Dragons.
All right. All three are first year players in MPA.
Yeah, so four of them. And there was another guy on there, too, who I missed, and he got. And so. And it made me think that the Lehigh Valley team is like a real hotbed for NPB players. As I mentioned in a previous podcast, Scott Matheson came out of a team that had like four or five guys who ended up here, and one guy had played in Japan with the Tigers and Blue Wave.
Right.
So anyway, so he told me about how excited he was to come to Japan and so on and so forth. And we talked about some of the adjustments that he's trying to make and his impressions of the game so far. And just as a little aside, I watched him as I was waiting for him to come over and finish his practice. He was teaching one of his teammates how to throw his cutter.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, and so we talked a little bit about that, and he just seems like a really nice fella. And so let's have a listen to David Buchanan.
This week, our guest on the podcast is Yakult Swallows right-hander David Buchanan, who's off to a nice start. Welcome, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to be here.
Okay, well, yeah, obviously, I would think you would be glad to be here. You've been, you know, you got off to a kind of a nice start. Yeah. And so far, I'm going to ask you a couple of things. I mean, first of all, what was your first impression when you actually made the decision and came to Japan and got to camp? What were some of the things that jumped out at you right away?
What jumped out to me is the work ethic of the guys, and just like the amount of workload that they do. But they take pride in everything they do. That they take pride in taking care of their bodies and being healthy. And you know, like watching film to learn what they do every start. We go over the hitters in depth every time before a series starts. So they take a lot of pride in what they do here. Mm-hmm. And then just the overall culture over here is just unbelievable. I mean, I've talked about it to numerous people, just how kind and polite everyone is. Mm. And it literally blows you away just how polite, from taxi drivers to waiters to guys, you know, cleaning up stuff off the street. I mean, anybody you come in contact with, everybody's just so polite. And it's very humbling to know that just you come over here as a foreigner, being people, I know who you are, and they still treat you with the utmost respect and kindness. It's very nice.
Yeah, one of the things about Japanese baseball and that they start here from high school even, and from junior high school, is, you know, teaching the kids manners. They hammer it into them, almost beat it into them. And you find the kids here and the young players to be really respectful, mm-hmm, of their time on the field and their teammates. Has that been the case with you?
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone, they all pull for each other, and you know, there's no competition of like, you know, wanting to do better than the next guy in a bad way. Mm-hmm. Everyone's out there trying to do their best, and that's all they're concerned about. They're not concerned about if you pitch better than them or if they pitch better than you. It's not about that. It's about the team. It's about the team winning, and it's very nice to play in that atmosphere.
In AAA, is there a little bit of that because everyone's trying to be in the majors instead of being in AAA?
Everybody has that edge of, like, you know, wanting to prove themselves. I mean, I haven't experienced guys that want other guys to do bad. No. I've never met guys who want to do that, which is good. But, I mean, it really, it's all about, you know, wanting to do the best you can to get to the next level, because ultimately that's the goal. I mean, you know, guys in AAA, you know, they're, as you move up, you're glad to be at other levels, mm-hmm, but your ultimate goal is to get to the big leagues.
Well, this year, I know this, your last year in AAA with the Phillies, you had, there's four guys on that team who are now playing in Japan this, mm-hmm, year. Have you had a chance to talk to everybody?
Yeah, I've talked to all of them. My wife and Darren Russ' wife are very close, and Darren and I are close as well. I talked to Phil Klein, mm-hmm, a lot through text. Me and Frank Herman have ran into each other, just talking about different books for reading and other stuff like that, and just our experiences. So it's nice to be able to have that connection with other guys you know coming out here.
Okay, now speaking of coming here, now obviously you have, now basically you throw a four seam, two seam. You were instructing somebody about a cutter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's one I hadn't seen, change up in the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of those, which is probably working best for you in Japan? Maybe that was the surprise.
I mean, it really depends on the day.
Okay.
Which pitch is working that day. I mean, I have days where certain pitches aren't working. The cutter has been a beneficial pitch for, you know, being able to get inside on lefties and just trying to force the ground ball. But it really just, it depends on the hitter, depends on the day, mm-hmm, depends on our approach and situation of the game.
Okay.
So, I mean, whatever pitcher I can get the guy out with is what I'm going to use.
Okay. Now, I noticed, you know, when I looked at your numbers, you know, I saw you gave up, you're not striking out tons of guys, but on the other hand, you're not walking guys. And the other thing is that I saw you gave up six home runs,
mm-hmm,
but pretty much nothing else.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the home run has been a little kryptonite for me. But fortunately, they're usually solo shots, which, you know, I've always been told that, you know, solo shots really ain't going to burn you. But, I mean, even the home runs I've given up here, I just... You know, you make some bad pitches and make a mistake, they capitalize on it. That's part of the game. But, I mean, as long as you can minimize the inning, you know, that's all you can do.
It seems like, I mean, just looking at those numbers, and again, not watching you play every game, but looking at those numbers that you're in the zone a lot, and it's basically when you make a mistake, then you're vulnerable to a home run. But they're not getting a lot of hard contact off you in general.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal, is to miss barrels. You know, I'm not trying to strike everybody out. I'm just trying to miss the sweet spot, you know.
Okay. And so far, has that been your plan since?
Yeah, that's been my plan just from pitching all along. Sometimes I'm more successful at it than other times, but, you know, again, that's just baseball.
Okay, I'm going to ask now, what kind of adjustments have you made to are there any, like, concrete adjustments you had to make because the ball's different and your pitches weren't working the way you wanted them to work, or?
Not really. I haven't really. I mean, that's a common question among a lot of people. The laces definitely are a little higher than the balls in the States, but as far as, like, changing the movement of certain pitches and stuff, I really haven't noticed a difference.
Okay, have you made really minute adjustments to how you grip it?
Not really, no. I'm throwing the same grips that I had in the States. And
okay.
I really haven't noticed that big of a difference.
So the next thing is, just getting used to that norm.
Right, absolutely.
Okay. Another thing is, you come here, a lot of the foreign players come to Japan, and the coaches have, because they're looking at the game from a different cultural perspective, they'll sometimes look at a pitch. I know this is a famous example. Jeremy Powell came here, and he was basically, he's a big guy, so this is like, throw four seamers. You should be throwing heat. Mm-hmm. And his best pitch when he was in high school was a curveball.
Mm-hmm.
He came to Japan, and they said, well, how come you don't throw your curveball?
No.
And he said, because the major league coaches told me, well, you know, throw the fastball. And so he became... You know, he ended up with a 7 or 8 year career in Japan because of his curveball. Have the coaches said to you, wow, that's a good pitch, let's see we want to see more of that?
They like my cutter, but again, it's just one of those things that, I mean, they're about the same thing about getting guys out. They kind of let me do my own thing. I'll definitely ask input and advice from them at certain times, like throughout the bullpens and during the game and stuff. But, I mean, really, I think these guys know how to hit. I mean, the guys here, they're very good at putting contact. So striking them out is not the easiest thing to do. So being able to really execute your location, I think, is very important. So no matter what pitch you're throwing, being able to put it in the right spot, I think, is the biggest thing.
Well, that's the thing here in Japan, is, you know, locating.
Right.
And a lot of the pitchers that come from the majors, you know, where it is so much so fastball-oriented and the secondary pitches are kind of like secondary.
Right.
Here they come and they get that, no, you're breaking, you got to be able to throw your breaking ball for strikes more often.
Right.
More. Have you, so that's one change that a lot of the guys get. And the other one is a slide step.
Yeah, they did enforce a lot in spring training. It was being quick to the plate, and you got a lot of guys that can run out here.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of things. Like, even with the ground balls that I'm getting, I'm getting a lot of infield hits too. Just guys that, you know, you got guys that can burn on the line. So they put the ball on the ground, and you look up thinking it's a routine ground ball, and it's a bang bang play at first. So
that's just more of a mental adjustment than a physical adjustment so far, just getting used to that little style.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, anyway, thank you so much for sharing your time with us, and we'll look forward to more success and good health this year.
Appreciate it. Take care.
You. All right.
Okay, thanks, David. Real pleasure. And I know John's looking forward to meeting you, too, unless you've already met him.
Nope. Looking forward to having a chat with him one day.
Okay. And, he seemed like, I think, 9 out of 10 guys who come to Japan these days are in that, man, I'm glad to be here.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I remember when half the guys who came to Japan, like, I wish I weren't in Japan, but I'm going to make the best of it.
I get you. Yeah. I'm going to make the best of it. Or, I want to extend my career, so I'm here.
Yep. So there's a lot of motivation, but so often now it's a case of, this is something I kind of, you know, I had in the back of my mind as an option, you know. And again, most of the guys love coming because, you know, you come to Japan and you're playing in front of 20, 30,000 people and the crowds are noisy. It's mm-hmm. like, it's really exciting for most of these guys. The atmosphere is a huge notch. I mean, I have to say the atmosphere at a Japanese ball game is way more interesting, at least for a newcomer. I mean, it can get tiring. It can get old, you know, noise.
Certainly.
But when you're coming here and if you were playing in front of 12,000 people at Safeco Field one day and it was kind of rainy and damp and it was quiet, and then you come to Jingu and people are like waving umbrellas and the chanting is nonstop, it's got to be a jolt, you know. It's got to be like a little baseball caffeine.
Yeah, you'd think the guy coming up to the plate. Well, I actually had some friends come from the States recently and, mm-hmm. and they've attended their first Japanese baseball games with an S. They wanted to go to as many parks as they could, and they went to Yokohama, and they went out to Chiba. Mm-hmm. Those two for sure. I think they went to Tokyo Dome, and they just said they couldn't believe it. You know, they were emailing me every 5 minutes. Do they have a song for every player, or is this guy just really famous? You know, and I said, no, every player, and they couldn't believe that the fans were just as it seemed. They said they're just as active as the players are.
Wow. I'll tell you, if those players were as active as the fans, they'd be giving them drug tests.
Especially in Chiba, yeah, drug tests. I think some of the fans right now in Chiba have to take something.
Hashtag
high. Yeah, well, but antidepressants, I don't know if they're on the banned list.
But yeah, about the interview, that's what kind of stood out to me was the fact that here we have this guy all shiny and new. He just got off the boat, it seems. I mean, his comments about the cultural differences and the politeness, and I'm like, yeah, we hear about those things all the time. And sometimes when you've been in Japan as long as Jim and I have, you tend to forget those things that people are really polite. When you walk into some store or shop, they acknowledge your presence, and they say thank you, and they wrap everything so nicely and on the outside. Because when you get on a train and people are shoving you back as far as they can and as hard as they can so they can get on the train, you forget all about those polite things that happen over the course of a day, and you just want to push back.
Well, that's a pushback. That's a little pushback, but you know, I don't find that as much, but yeah, you certainly put everything in. You have a better context, you have a better perspective the longer you've been here. But of course, I always take it with a grain of salt because I remember Wilson Valdez.
Yeah. Wait, really?
Wilson Valdez, who got a win as a pitcher, I know, in the major leagues, also with the Phillies. And anyway, okay. So the Wilson Valdez came and. After two, I talked to him after his second game in NPB, and he pretty much wanted to adopt the country.
Right, I'm gonna die here, bury me here.
Yeah, that's right. I'm gonna make my home in Japan, and then he got a taste of the manager ain't telling you nothing about anything, right. And you don't know you're gonna. As soon as basically after three games, he made a mistake, and they took him out of the game in the middle of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of make an example of him. And then he was saying, like, hold on a second, where's my passport? I got to get out of here.
Right, yeah. Adopt this.
Yeah, that got old quickly. So I didn't get that vibe. I don't get that vibe from most people, but that's the most extreme case. But yeah, you know, you kind of got to take it all in time. And he seems... he seems really laid back and observant, and I was really curious about all the changes he's made. He said none.
Yeah, I found that. I mean, that was one of the other things I was going to comment on. I found that very interesting, or just compelling stuff that he would come over and maybe he just, you know, like a lot of times I tell the listeners, I don't ask some questions because I think it might be asking the player to compromise company secrets, so to speak, and get into some details that maybe they don't want to get into. And he admitted the stitching on the balls is slightly higher on the MPB Mizuno ball.
Yeah.
But not having to make any adjustments at all seems weird to me.
Yeah, it's like, I think the other issue is it might also be kind of a feel issue.
Uh-huh.
And that you get used to how the ball feels, you know, and at first it might be weird, but once you get used to how it feels, you're used to it. And, you know, I expected almost him. I almost was hoping he'd say something like, yeah, you know, like I trim my nail more or I trim it less on, you know, on the, and I, you know, I, it feels different on my slider or something, but no, basically, I think everybody tries to do that through. The thing is that most pitchers, or, you know, I say this as if I actually know what I'm talking about.
Hey, you know, you threw a ball once.
I have seen baseballs and I have thrown things.
Okay.
That makes me a pitcher, right? So it would make my wife a pitcher.
Wow.
So
I'm not editing that out.
That's all right. Anyway, so the point being that some guys, and I mentioned when we were talking, I mentioned Hiroki Kuroda. You know, he was really trying to duplicate to some degree. I know Trey Hillman told me that when he went to America, he was trying to duplicate his curveball, the effect of his curveball that he had in Japan in the States. And it's really hard because the ball's a little slicker. And he kept at it, and Trey was saying, I'm just admire this guy's work ethic because he's just like, he's not giving up on that curveball, even though it's nothing.
Right.
And that was when he was with the Dodgers, and Trey Hillman was the head coach. And then when he came back from Japan, he wanted to duplicate the two-seamer he had in the majors, but the ball doesn't move the same way.
Right.
Because it's tackier here. And the fastballs don't run as much, and so he had to change. You know, he tried to resemble that angle by moving over to the first base side of the rubber to get, you know, to give the pitch more angle because he wasn't getting it throwing
right,
the thing
right.
Straight.
And even when you talked about, you gave suggestions about this, that, and he didn't offer any more details on what pitches were moving a little bit more or a little bit less with the MPB balls or how pitches were breaking for him or anything. He just kind of said, yeah, no, I don't know. Yeah, I don't have any problems. I don't know that he's holding back on us. I just think he was.
I didn't get that. I just got the feeling he was happy with what he got.
With the results, right.
Yeah, or, so he threw his cutter and it worked fine, so I'm going to leave it alone.
Or what you started, or I thought you were going to head down this path when you started, that he just made the adjustments automatically and unconsciously, and he doesn't think he made any as a result.
That's possible. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think, and that's what I meant about the feel.
Right.
You know, you get the feel for how your fingers are on the ball.
Right.
And you make really almost intuitive adjustments to it. Oh,
exactly.
This doesn't work. I mean, you have to do that in the game because the balls aren't all the same.
Right.
This is a big thing about them going to the majors. You know, Hiroshi Gondo, Samurai Japan pitching coach, was telling me, hey, when I fool around with Major League Baseballs or when I fool around with American golf balls, I'm always struck by how the quality control is so poor that you get balls that are really different. I mean, you know, one to the next. And in Japan, they tend to be much more uniform.
Right, but not all the same. Because I was thinking about that the other day when I saw, I can't remember what highlight I was watching, but I saw the ball jump off the bat to the opposite field. And I don't know who it was. I think it was Alex Guerrero of the Dragons who hit a home run to right. And he hit it. But there have been some guys, a couple of Hiroshima players who hit home runs at Nagoya Dome, and they made the dome look pretty regular on a couple pitches. And I kept thinking, did somebody throw one of those 2000, what was it, 11, 12? I don't know. It's one of the flying balls, one of the ones that had a little bit more.
Or maybe that was 2011 when they misstored the balls. And then I remembered, the reason I remember that is because Mizuno, you know, basically, they kept saying how Mizuno was so reliable and so reliable. And all I think is, wait, hold on. Didn't we have like 2 months of more home runs than we expected because they mishandled the baseballs?
Right.
And, you know, that whole thing, every time I think about that whole fiasco from start to finish, all I could think of is it's amazing that these incompetents could keep a secret that long.
Hashtag high heat.
Because it's like they're like the Three Stooges. I mean, these guys went to the Three Stooges School of Baseball Management. Anyway, so to get back to David Buchanan, you know, he's off to a pretty good start. And one of the things I noticed about David Buchanan, and I was interested to talk about him, and he did get into this a little bit, was, you know, how his pitching style. Because basically, when I talked to him, he'd given up, I think, 24 hits, and I take that back, about 40 hits, and a quarter of those were for extra bases, 6 home runs and 4 doubles.
Right, yep.
You know, basically, he's not striking out guys, he's not walking guys, and he's not giving up extra base hits. So, you know, it looks to me
you mean he's not giving up extra base hits in
that's correct. Yeah.
Only six and then 4.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But basically, he's basically throwing the ball in the zone, getting enough movement, you know, changing speeds and getting enough movement that he's keeping people off the barrel of the bat. And then when he really messes up, they hit him a long way.
Right, yeah.
But he's
go to your room. You're punished.
Well, no, I mean that. But that's part of that. Seems like his game. And I was thinking about back. You know, we were talking about Benamu Mima 2 weeks ago, and it's very much the way his stuff looks this year, which is, you know, pitching much more to contact, basically cutting down on his walks, but giving up more home runs, but living with it because he's not giving up a lot of hits and he's not walking anybody.
Yeah, looking at his ground ball rate, which is about 83%, but he's given up hits at a 271 clip on balls in play.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, he's not striking out too many, but he's not walking that many. So
and
6 quality starts, a 2.40 ERA. Although he did lose the other night when he played against the Giants, but
right.
I mean, you know, he was going up against Sugano, but he gave up 5 runs in 6 innings, so that wasn't his best effort. But he's still keeping the team. I mean, 5 hits, 2 walks. He's keeping the team in the game and making a seamless transition into talking about the Swallows. I just remember the prediction show and mm-hmm. how we forgot, or there was a miscommunication or whatever happened. And that no one had prepared the Yakult intro. And I honestly thought that's how the rotation, that's what the rotation would resemble. Something done on the fly. Like we had to do that day when we taped with the 4 guys. And you said that Mitsuru Manaka, the skipper, is probably going to have a headache trying to come up with a rotation. And you know, they pieced it together. I know that Masanori Ishikawa and his soft tossing stuff mm-hmm. and the sinkers and he was the opening day starter and all that stuff. But you know, he hasn't killed him. Buchanan has been
I mean, he hasn't killed him. Ishikawa basically he doesn't kill anybody.
Hashtag high heat.
He's a pacifist. I mean, he has these inexplicably good games. You know. You when you watch him pitch, it's like, okay, you cross your fingers, and then he's one of these guys you cross your fingers and hope he doesn't kill you, and then every 2 out of 5 times he has a really good game, and you're going, wow, he's just so smart sometimes that when he's got a pitch that works, he can beat you to death with it.
Yeah. So we're still waiting to see what happens with Ross Ohlendorf, if he's going to be able to contribute this year. And the guy I really like is that rookie righty, Tomoya Hoshi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has this bat-cracking fastball, and mm-hmm. he can control the zone with it, so he really doesn't have to. And I think that's what they wanted him to do, is throw some more secondary stuff so that mm-hmm. he could keep guys off balance, keep them off the fastball, and then learn to control it or command it better and get to whatever zone he wanted to be in. And when they were comfortable with him throwing that stuff, they put him into the rotation, and he has been pretty good for them so far. So I really like him. I saw him in the preseason and I thought, oh man, this guy's going to be good. And then they were using him out of the bullpen, and I thought he was going to be just a reliever, maybe 8th inning guy, and maybe they were going to groom him to be the next closer. And then all of a sudden, they've got this rotation issue, which I think they had, and I think they knew they had it, but they were going to Yahtzee the whole thing and see what landed where, and then start to filter out the guys who weren't producing and bring in the guys who were, and he was one of the guys who was producing, so that's good for them. I'm happy, because I think without Buchanan, without guys like Hoshi and Ishikawa actually doing well, God only knows where this team would be. And, you know,
I think it's pretty obvious they'd be last. They'd be in last place.
Well, but I'm not, I don't mean
where I picked
standings,
them to be.
I don't mean standings wise. I mean, buried in 30 games under 500, you know, 40 games into the season. That's what I meant.
Okay. Well, that's putting it mildly. Of course, I came out, of course, they don't have their regular third baseman. They're getting by, you know, they're getting some production from guys they really didn't expect. Tomohiro Araki's not really, he's the guy I expected more out of because I thought he was younger.
Mm-hmm. I thought he was younger. He played younger. He looked younger.
No, he came up at the same time with Tetsuto Yamada.
Mm-hmm.
And they both had pretty good numbers on the farm team. It's just that I was comparing a 23-year-old with an 18-year-old.
Right.
So that's kind of different.
A so, little. Yeah.
Yeah. But and speaking of Tetsuto Yamada, he is now, for the first time since he got drilled in the back last August, he's beginning to play like Tetsuto Yamada.
Hey, we know you.
Yeah.
Long time no see.
Yeah, and I say that guardedly because, you know, as bad as he was, he probably was, you know, he was basically a singles hitter.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they were leading him off because the only thing he could do was hopefully scare people into giving him walks and hit singles and steal bases.
Right, yeah.
But
didn't you used to be Tetsuo Yamada?
Exactly.
Situation? Yeah.
Yeah. You look like a guy who used to be famous, to paraphrase Julia Roberts. Okay. So he has been performing kind of like himself. So I'm guessing he's been able to make some adjustments to how people have been pitching him. We'll see how that goes. You know, I think back with him, about this time a year ago, I was talking to Alex Ramirez about Tetsuto Yamada, and he said, you know what, don't be so quick to push this guy on the fast track to the majors because, you know, you got to go through, I won't quote Ramichan because it's impossible, but basically he said, you got to go through a few iterations, you know, to you know, adjust and adjust back and be able to maintain your level of production. And he hasn't quite done that yet. Yeah, he can, but he wasn't ready to sign off on it. And then, of course, getting hit in the back and having that whole revelation about, you know, pitching him inside and then killing him outside and so on and so forth. But it looks like I haven't been watching carefully, but, you know, the numbers look like he's better. He's getting back.
Yeah, he's better. And the team, you know, for a while there, they were just flip-flopping seemingly on a daily basis with the Dragons for last place. And they've climbed up into fourth place. And I kind of start looking at the standings. We'll get into that in a few minutes here. But
I need to put a little asterisk. I kind of start caring about the standings.
Look at him. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You're always looking at him. You make it sound like
I try not to.
You avert your eyes.
I honestly try not to. I do try to avert my eyes, but when you watch these news programs, that's the first thing they bring up is the standings. Mm. And, you know, if I don't have the remote control, if I don't have my finger on the remote already, then I see them and I look at them. But I don't care too much about them. But yes, you're correct. I start to care about the standings about now. And, you know, I did want to mention this thing, though, about the Swallows. I remember seeing a tweet from one of the Swallows guys or someone.
Swallows fan people?
No, the fan people who tweet
blog
from the
tweeters,
Swallows
okay.
blog tweeters. Yeah, okay. I think, or someone else. But it was noting that there have been 3 walk-off home runs by the team this year. And I think 2 of the 3 or all the 3 have been hit by cast-offs from other teams. And my thought was, what are you talking about? Half the first team roster was cast-offs.
Oh.
Well, I mean, look, they've got Kazuki Kondo, the former Oryx righty. And he's coming back from a long hiatus because he had surgery, right?
Right.
And he's been pretty useful out of the pen. They've got KG Obiki, another Orcs guy, and he's been mostly their regular at short. And Tomotaka Sakaguchi, Oryx guy.
Fair enough.
Playing a lot of center field. Atsushi Ugumori, he hit one of those walk-off home runs.
He hit the grand slam, yeah.
Yeah, well, there was another grand slam, so it wasn't just the one. And he came from the Fighters. And then Takahiro Imanami from the Fighters.
Right.
Is also on the roster a lot. And, I mean, all those guys are cast-offs.
Well, most of them really aren't playing. But Sakaguchi and Obiki, they actually signed him as a free agent because they... You know, he filed for free agency, man. So, but my thought when they signed him was, you got to be kidding me. But they had a plan for him, and you know, and he helped them win a pennant. So there.
Cast off.
Sakaguchi also. Well, Sakaguchi is my colleague who used to be the Oryx beat writer was the prime example of the typical Oryx player who looks awfully darn good as soon as he gets out of a Buffalo's uniform.
Right, yeah. Well, the same with Kondo. I mean, I'm really happy for Kondo because I used to really root for him, and he used to pitch really well with Oryx.
Sure.
And like I said, he got injured and had this surgery, and he's back. And he's looking pretty good for them. He's doing some good work for them in leverage situations and some, I would say, mid to late game situations for them. They need it. They certainly need it. And he's been good for them. So.
Yeah, they are a team of spare parts. And good for them. Wish them well.
I know you do. All right, so keeping along those lines in terms of the standings and making a two-seam transition, I want to talk about what I see in the standings because I look up and here it's May 22nd as it's May 21st, but when the show is released, it'll be the 22nd, and we see the Rakuten Eagles and the Hanshin Tigers atop of their respective leagues, and I just have to wonder, are these teams for real? Do we start thinking... These teams are at most real pennant contenders and at least going to be in the playoffs. And I'm looking at the Eagles, and I can say yes with the Eagles. I see so many positives. I can make a strong argument for both to fall out of the playoff chase, but the arguments for why the Eagles are the league leaders are so compelling. They're scoring so many runs. They're pitching well. They've got these young players. They have a mixture. I think both of these teams, the Tigers and... The Eagles have a really good mixture of young players with veteran guys. And the veteran guys aren't all playing in the case of the Eagles. They're like you've got Kazuo Matsui on the bench, but he's still a great role model and he's still a great, I guess I would look at him as a part-time coach for some of those players, the way he gets ready and stays fit. And his work ethic is just a role model on your team.
Well, I certainly agree. I think they're both really. The thing with the Eagles. With the Tigers defense, you don't really I want to say they're both solid teams. I think they're both solid contenders. It's hard to say a team solid when they have the Hanshin Tigers defense. But you know, if you score enough runs and your pitching is your pitchers execute well enough, and you know. And they can get over, you know, they can get over that kind of, you know, the tomfoolery going on behind them, you know, and say, jump in Jehoshaphat, let me get back to work, you know, throw another, if you can do that, then they can compete, you know, they've got us, you know, if they say, well, you know, I pitch for the Tigers, so this stuff happens, you know, these guys are going to score a bunch of runs for me, so I'm going to, you know, make my next pitch. And then they'll go and score some runs for me, you know. And if you can do that, then the Tigers have a good chance to be in it. It's entirely depending on you know their defense not killing them and their pitchers dealing it because they're just a run scoring machine. I mean, not quite like the Carp are, but they're in that mix. They're in that mold.
I know. Some of the numbers you look at and you look at the Central League, and there's only 2.5 games separating the Tigers and the Carp, but the Carp have really good numbers, especially offensively. You think you're looking at the first place team when you look at some of the numbers across the board, the runs scored,
right.
and the power and the doubles.
Well, they have the offense. The Carp have easily the best offense in NPB this year, and which is hard to say because they're a Central League team, and you know, so it's really hard to say, oh, they're better than SoftBank, but I have to say, yeah, they are. And the other thing with the Carp is they went through. You've been watching their pitchers, and we had that great start from Akitake Okada, and some of their young pitchers came out really well. I had a friend of mine from Taiwan who's a Bay Stars fan, was uh-huh. over here today, and we were talking about that, watching the Bay Stars Giants game, and you know, with the young pitchers, we saw this with the Bay Stars rookie Hamaguchi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically the first chance he got to pitch, he looked really good because the batters didn't know what to make of him. You know, they hadn't seen his pitches before, didn't know what to expect. The second time, you know, they have a better idea, and it's really with the young players, it's hard to keep up with the veterans a little bit because they're more used to making adjustments at this level.
Right.
And so once they've seen you, it's not quite like the jig is up, but they're going to respond faster than you're going to be able to respond to them, typically. So it's not a surprise, you know, when you see it. I guess it's a surprise when a guy almost throws a no-hitter, but to the point that he doesn't take people by surprise the second time, and he's playing catch-up for a little while until he, you know, has some success. So, yeah, with the young pitchers, it's a little hard to keep up, and the Carp had a lot of that. Young pitcher success. And having said that, I watched an interesting game the other day. I watched a pitcher's duel with your guy Kotsky Matayoshi.
Right.
Pitching against Alan Curry, who's a really, really nice kid and, you know, very friendly, and we always talk.
And much improved this year.
Much improved.
Steadier. Yeah.
Yeah, looking like, you know, it's like when he gets in trouble, he makes his pitches. You know, he lost that game because he gave up an unearned run in seven. He gave up two runs, one unearned in seven innings. And when he was in trouble, he made his pitches, and one of them got hit, you know. And the difference in that game was Matayoshi would have given up a run except there was a runner on base with one out, and he lined out to second base, and it was barely caught. And a double play.
Yeah, so, I saw that highlight. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it was really good. I really like what I've seen from Alan Curry. He's pitching as good, basically, what they expected when they drafted him. I think he was a second round draft pick out of Ajia Daigaku, and so yeah, I've seen that, and I like that from the Carp. But again, the Tiger, going back to the Tigers, do they have that? I think so. You know, Randy Messenger is being Randy Messenger, and they're scoring runs for him. Of course, having said that, when we talked about the Tigers a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned how often they'd scored three runs or more for him, and that disappeared one day. His streak's over now.
Yeah, I did notice that. And it came after he was on the show, too.
Yeah, that's all right. But
it happens.
It happens. He's not going to hold it against you.
But the Tigers are getting. I mean, yeah, I was thinking that they had a lot of quality starts, and when I looked at the numbers, they're second to last in the league in the number of quality starts behind the Bay Stars, and leading the league, there are two teams tied: the Yakult Swallows and the Carp with 26 each. So I mean, it's weird, but that just shows you that the Tigers are also getting great work from the bullpen. And when we talked about that team, I think last week and the week before, we didn't mention the fact that they've got the Mateo and Dolas at the back of the bullpen, who are, you know, really, they give up runners, so their whip is probably pretty high, but they end up getting out of trouble, and it seems like the defense plays enough defense behind them and they don't give up runs, or they don't give up leads, and so they've been doing well too. So
yeah,
I like what I've seen. So I have to say, I don't think the Tigers maybe are a pennant-winning team because of that defense. I think it's going to catch up with them in the long run, like I've been saying, even though the offense has been pretty good. But I really do think the lineup, if it keeps producing like it is, obviously, is going to give them a chance to to either finish second or at least be in the playoffs.
Yeah, but I think
it's
still early.
It's still early.
Right. Yeah, I think right now, basically, we're finally seeing some separation in the Central League, and which is not a good thing for the Bay Stars.
No,
because they're sinking. Swallows are looking like they could win a playoff spot. I don't think they will, because again, they're the Tin Men. But
no, I don't believe in them either. With all the quality starts,
they're playing well. They're playing well, but they started it. You know, they put themselves in a hole to start the season, and we'll see how that works. But yeah, Tigers and Eagles. I don't see a single problem with the Eagles, to be honest. What I see with the Eagles are things that could get better.
Yeah, their foreign trio could start hitting more consistently.
Yeah, they could. Carlos Piguero could learn to play, I think he needs to play on the warning track and then let the balls come to him, you know, charge him, not let him get over his head, because when the balls get over his head, he has trouble with them. But
well, the thing I like about the Eagles is they don't, obviously, they were last team to lose double digits. Mm-hmm. In games this year, and they have obviously only played Pacific League teams, and they have a winning record against everybody except Cebu, and they're 3-3 with Cebu.
Mm.
And they're really killing Nippon Ham. They're 6-1 against them.
Well, you know, things are shaking out. The Hawks are playing better, so the Hawks are looking like the Hawks, and the Fighters are looking like the Fighters, which brings us to
Sesame Street? The Buffaloes. Oh, yes.
Buffaloes brings us to, you know.
Well, I knew this would happen, but it's weird.
Oh, John knew.
I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to say that. I'm sorry. I apologize. I didn't think that their start. I really liked the way they were playing early on. And yep. Stefan Romero went down, and they seem to have gone down with him, because they haven't been able to win regularly since he left the lineup. But like I said, I think if one guy gets injured, you didn't have a good team in the first place. So other guys have not produced, and they've got this situation where they throw out pitchers. I don't know what they're doing with the rotation. It's hard to follow. It's really hard to follow sometimes. And the lineup's the same thing, and they're throwing different guys in at second base. It's just, I don't know. Koyano, he was a really good defensive player at third base I guess 10 years ago when the Fighters were winning Japan Series or reaching consecutive Japan Series. I'm not sure that he's that guy. He makes a good play once in a while, but I don't know about every day putting him out there. And, he's hitting well. I know you got to get the bat out there. Hiroyuki Nakajima, he's producing well when he gets out there. But I don't know. They're just mixing and matching all over the place. I don't know. Maybe it's just hard to be consistent when you're not Bobby Valentine, and there's no actual set lineup against particular guys. Like, we have a hard throwing left-hander, we're going to go with this lineup. We got a left-hander who throws junk, we're going to go with this lineup. We have a right-hander who throws hard, blah, 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 and so on.
I was going to say, well, they lost today. So that's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. They've lost 15 of their last 17 games.
Yeah, it has been ugly. Yeah.
Which shows you how well they started after losing three straight. They basically won almost every game until April 27th, and then they after a couple of days of winning and losing, now they've gone. They look like a glider, you know. On April 27th, they cut the tow rope, and now they're kind of going. They're going, hey, where are the engines? Where are the engines on this thing?
I think we're falling now. Yeah.
Yeah. We're falling. So basically, yes. So they're playing well when Chihiro Kaneko pitches. And I think until today. And then Yuki Nishi was pitching well, and then he's not. And Brandon Dixon was pitching well, and he's had he's had a couple of rough starts. So, yeah, so things were going really well and everybody was healthy, and now things aren't going really well, and we'll see. But do they have the talent? But what I would question about I think mentally they're okay, but I think I want to say Kaneko's being successful was huge for them. It sort of got everybody thinking they could win. But now when he's the only person who's being routinely effective, you have to think, well, maybe we got a problem. The last week until through Saturday, they gave up. They lost 6-3, 7-2, 7-2, 7-3. They had a game where they, a Conoco game, they won 3-2. And then before that, they're losing 11-0, 8-2, 6-1, 7-0.
Ouch.
Yeah,
ouch,
yeah, basically.
Stop beating me.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm saying is these aren't like the contending team losses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're not scoring runs and they're giving up a lot of runs. So I don't see what I see right now is Oryx look like they're headed for fifth place.
Hopefully Romero gets back and maybe gives them some confidence and hits well. But I think the other guys have to produce and you have to make plays. And I'm not going to blame it on one guy, but
no.
I didn't expect them to be. I think they played a little bit over their heads at the beginning. And probably the rest of the league has made some adjustments to what they've been doing. They didn't, like I said, I've been saying all along, they didn't really bring in different guys. It's basically the same guys except for maybe Phil Koch. So they're going to have to step up their game and make some adjustments after this down period that has them 5 games under 500.
Well, here's the thing is they were playing well. I didn't think they were playing badly when, they were just eking out wins, but they were playing pretty well. I mean, they were playing as well as might be expected. And now they're just sort of, they look like they're falling apart. They look like, the typical Buffalo team not playing as well as they should be. It's almost like when they start losing, it's like, oh, yeah, I guess we're not that good.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So. All right, making a four-seam transition, a couple of notes. First of all, the Lotte Marines picked up Roel Santos from the Cuban player as they and Chunichi vie for the worst records in NPB. Unfortunately for Lotte, they're winning that battle at the moment.
Having said that, they won two out. They beat the Eagles 2 out of 3 games. They weren't really one-sided. They were very tight games, which is, says something for the Eagles.
Yes, and still they're 11-30. So,
They got 20. They got basically, 18% of their wins this weekend.
Oh, God. I love when you put it into perspective, numbery, like. All right. Also, this past Saturday, there was a memorial service for our friend Wayne Grosick, and that was something that I wasn't able to attend, obviously, because I had this prearranged commitment, a family commitment overseas that was basically planned in February. And it broke my heart. I couldn't believe that it was going to be on the day that or the week that I was out of town. And had I been able to, I would have canceled my trip, and I would have loved to have gone. But I understand it was a star-studded event, and you were there.
I was, and it was. I could go on this for longer than the ceremony was, but I will suffice it to say. Jason Koskrey did a bang up job. He spoke and he held it together, and I didn't think I'd have been able to do that. And Bob Whiting said some nice things, and he told us, he said the only time he's known Wayne since basically for close to 40 years. And he said the only time I ever heard him get angry was when he misspelled his name in the meaning of Ichiro.
Oh.
In the first edition, of course, I was thinking, oh my gosh, because, well, he misspelled it, but I proofread it.
Oh.
So.
But you Wayne, got that sinking feeling, huh?
But Bob told me when he did that, he said there's basically only two people, although there were only two people he would have trusted to check his book, and one was me and one was Wayne. So I'm truly honored for that.
Yes.
So Bob spoke, Jason spoke, Marty Kuhnert, his longtime friend, who does PR work with the Eagles and teaches up in Sendai. And they used to I remember they would broadcast games sometimes, Giants games.
Marty was a guest on the show years back.
Yeah, so he spoke well of him, talked about Wayne's love for cheeseburgers and Hooters.
Not necessarily in that order and not necessarily those objects, but yeah.
Well, Wayne was fond of having his picture taken with Hooters girls, which I didn't know because I've only been to Hooters that one time when we were both there. But yeah, you know, beer and pizza and cheeseburgers with no condiments.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Plain.
Plain, indeed. And so we learned all these things about Wayne and Jim Small, who's the MLB vice president for Asia,
mm-hmm.
told about how Wayne and Marty basically enabled him to live 14 years in Japan by getting him started and, you know, showing him, you know, teaching him what he needed to do to survive here when he couldn't speak any Japanese. And so it was really entertaining and cheerful and positive. And I will... You know, I have to give a shout out to Bobby Valentine for, you know, when I walked in to the Foreign Correspondents Club of Japan, the first thing I did was I saw all the flowers people had sent, and one of them had said from Brad Lefton and Bobby Valentine, and I thought, oh, that was very nice of Bobby, and I didn't expect to see him inside, but
in person, yeah.
Yeah, so Bobby said, you know, Jim, I'm going to die before you, but if a truck hits you, I'll come for your funeral. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. Thanks, Skip, for the pep talk.
But anyway, no, but what a great thing for him to do. NTV, the NTV chief announcer, gave a really heartfelt... Everybody basically was there and gave... They really hit Wayne spot on. And my last comment on this for the time being is what Wayne did was he just was supremely talented at speaking very plainly, very simply, very honestly, and staying in touch with people and connecting on that very fundamental level of, you know, we can do this better. We can do something together. I can help. This might be a good idea. That kind of very plain and very simple, very straightforward stuff. You know, we can do this. We can get it done. And he created these communities all throughout the Japanese baseball world, and he leaves a huge hole. But having said that, he leaves a huge hole because he created all these communities.
Right.
He created all these bonds that exist without him and exist because of him and will continue to thrive because of him. So right.
You mentioned Nippon Television or Nippon TV. And I'm pushing NTV, and I'm pushing for someone, NHK or that channel, to do a documentary on his life here. I think it would, you know, this is his adopted country, and yeah. I just think he deserves to get the consideration and recognition for all of the contributions that he has made to this sport and getting the word out about NPB to the nation, first of all, in English. And then to the world with his stories and his baseball bulletin column and the guidebook.
Yep.
And I don't think he's gotten enough credit for that from the Japanese media. And you know what I also want to do? I also want to encourage anyone who's listening or knows anybody who has some pull. Because I would like to see Wayne in the Hall of Fame for his contributions to Japanese baseball.
Well, I think about the Hall of Fame as much as most people, I think. And I don't know. And I look at the people who are in the Hall of Fame in Japan, and I think they really don't do broadcasters here. They don't do journalists. They do old journalists, you know, people who like grew the sport to start with, and the issue is the sport as a whole, and the people who promoted Japanese baseball, like Lefty O'Doul, and I think is Wayne Lefty O'Doul, and now he isn't. But you know what? I doubt he'll ever be. You know, we'll ever see a Wayne Grassick plaque in the Hall of Fame, but I think he deserves an exhibit. I think, you know, his camera, his guides, his story.
Exactly, yeah.
I think that deserves to be a permanent part.
I'm going to try to make that push. And, you know, just the consideration would be nice because he did contribute. And I encourage anyone who has the guidebook to just drop a postcard in the mail and remind his family, because his address is in that guidebook. It's usually page one. It says it's right inside the cover, right in the middle. And it has the address there, the mailing address. And just grab a postcard and say, you know what, Wayne gave me his guide when I was in Japan at this time, or I've seen the guide or I've used it. But just drop the family a line. Just let the family know how many people he touched.
Oh,
because he touched so many. And this was really a special occasion and so very worthy of a memorial service. And again, I was just heartbroken when I learned it was going to be May 20th. And I had to miss it, and of course it was for my own worthy cause, so I couldn't complain either way. So you know, things happen this way sometimes, and you can't control them. But let's go to fielding questions. All right, we're just going to hit one question this week, so we're going to keep. Sorry, Max, and sorry, Costa Free. We're going to keep that question on the back burner until I have some feelers out there, so maybe somebody will get back to me about the stuffed animals. But in the meantime, at British Carp Fan, in the meantime, skipping over that puddle of water, at British Carp Fan says, does Japanese baseball have a history of knuckleball pitchers? If not, why is that? So the last time I heard of a knuckleballer, it was Jared Fernandez of the Carp.
Mm.
And I think that was 2007.
Correct.
I want to say. And he had just got mauled constantly. And I went to camp that year and I talked to Marty Brown, who was the manager at the time of the Carp. And he said, and I quote, you have to be patient with knuckleball pitchers. They can drive you crazy with that pitch dancing all over the place and they're going to walk people. And then it seems like Mr. Fernandez didn't last very long, and I don't think Marty had the patience, because, dude, I didn't really see him pitching any more games after May, June of that year, and he was gone, and he just kind of disappeared from the face of NPB.
Well, it's interesting that you should say June, and I'll have his game log up, and yeah, he basically July 11th. He started, allowed 5 runs in 6 innings to the Swallows, and after that he was thrown into the bullpen. So he was mostly starting, but he was relieving sometimes. He kind of had a tough time adjusting, and but I'll tell you the Jared Fernandez story that I remember the most was on June 6th. In interleague play, the Carp were at Sapporo Dome playing against the Nippon Ham Fighters, and Marty Brown and Trey Hillman said, okay, we're going to announce the starting pitchers, and you know, we'll tell each other the starting pitchers. We're not going to announce it, but we'll tell each other, because at that time they weren't announced. And so Marty, you know, made a curled his fingers together like he was throwing a knuckleball.
Right.
And Trey shook his, and they said, I'm going to go with the right-hander, you know who? And he said, yeah. So anyway, and Trey said, oh, good. When he saw that Jared Fernandez is, that'll give me a chance to throw my knuckleball in BP. And Marty said, okay. You know, I think he was joking. Well, anyway, Trey throwing his knuckleball in BP, because Trey threw BP, became a media event for all the Fighters beat writers. And it was sort of like the Fighters, I remember Fernando Siguenal, who didn't turn around. He was a switch hitter, but he batted right-handed against knuckleballers.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Fernando took Fernandez deep, and Fernandez allowed four runs, three earned in 7 1/3 innings that day. And, you know, I didn't hear it. It was sort of a big story. Oh, Trey, the Fighters won because Trey threw knuckleballs in batting practice. Well, Marty was livid.
Yeah.
Marty is a enthusiastic, fiery, He's just all in, you know. He's 100%. It's all on his sleeve. It's all emotion. And he felt like Trey had sort of like set him up to make him look bad by announcing the pitcher and then throwing the knuckleballs, but because the press made a big deal about it.
Right.
And boy, he was like, Trey Hillman, you know, stabbed me in the back. I'm going. I said to Trey, you know, you might want to talk to Marty about that. I think he's a little ticked off. So anyway, I always remember that. But as far as knuckleballs in Japan, pretty darn few and far between. Japanese pitchers throwing knuckleballs. You mentioned the Yukinaga Maeda. Former Marine.
Before we started taping, I mentioned him, yeah.
And a Dragons pitcher, and he threw it occasionally. Satoru Komiyama used to throw a pitch that was like an ultra low speed forkball.
Ultra low speed, yeah.
Yeah, he threw it like 80 kilometers an hour, and it used to dance a bit. He called it a shake pitch.
Shake pitch. Okay.
Yeah.
Can I have extra syrup on that?
Indeed. He didn't say whether it was a chocolate shake or a vanilla shake, but...
Okay.
Okay, but yeah, I think it came with a straw. Because you could hit it with a straw. Okay, but I guess there was a Japanese pitcher in the 50s, Shozo Watanabe, the Hanshin Tigers, who threw what he called a knuckleball. But it was actually more of a change-up, according to Wikipedia, and it was called the Shozo Ball. So I guess the most famous Japanese knuckleballer of all time is probably the Knuckle Princess.
Yeah, Eddie Yoshida, yeah.
Right.
That's what I was going to say, is in professional ball these days, and she was pitching in one of the independent leagues. I can't remember.
Yeah, she was with the Ishikawa Million Stars.
Yep, yeah. With Julio Franco as her manager, and you remember I did an interview with him 2 years ago, two summers ago, and we talked about having her out there on the mound. So yeah, that's the only one I could think of. And as for a reason why they're not popular here, and why they don't,
I think it's probably fairly obvious why the knuckleball is not popular. Well, it's not even popular in America, but why it's not popular in Japan, I think, is fairly obvious.
And I would just say you have to have somebody who has success with it, and then they pass it down. And we just haven't seen that.
Ah, I think that's a good analogy. And I think the reason why nobody has success with it in Japan is because Japanese baseball is not about winning as much as it is about eliminating mistakes and eliminating losses through making mistakes. And pretty much no manager is going to sit there and be patient, be nearly as patient as Marty Brown with a guy with the calm, cool-headed Marty Brown when it comes to a knuckleballer throwing, you know, missing the strike zone, because walks will kill you, and therefore knuckleballers will kill you, therefore you'll lose games, therefore knuckleballs are bad.
And there you have it, British Carp fan. Anyone else who has a question, send it to @JBWPodcast on Twitter with the hashtag HighHeat. You can send questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on our Facebook page, leaving us a message there. Thanks again for listening. We will talk to you next week, and enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark, and see you, Wayne.